This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome to Jikoji Zen Center. My name is Nenzen. I am the abiding teacher here. I am not Jiro, who is advertised to be speaking today. He's not feeling well. And so I am pitch hitting for the Dharma. Before we begin, you noticed how I dedicated the merit, our effort this morning, our citta, our desire and effort to be awake to this life as it is, to Jiro's well-being, because he woke up not feeling well, so it's right here for me. But I imagine everyone in this room has someone on their heart, in your heart and mind, that you're thinking about. And there's lots of names on that altar from people who ask us or we offer. And I would just like to take a moment for you to say loud and proud of your loved ones. It could be people who are right now in some kind of transition with health. They could be people who have passed. Anybody could be any being too, an animal, a plant, anything that you are holding close and tenderly right now. So, please. So for the past 2 days, Jiro has been leading a calligraphy workshop here, and you can see some of this work up here. They have been writing a phrase from the Xinxian Min, which is this poem from medieval China that we read this morning. This line, I'm going to ask one of the participants, maybe Michael will pick on you if you can, or with the help of your cohorts. The line that we read this morning that this says in ideographs is, don't keep searching for the truth. Just let go of your opinions. Can you tell us the literal translation of these characters, Senkyo or Michael?
Would you like me to?
Well, I won't help for sure.
Go for it.
This is mine, and I'm not ashamed to say so.
It's beautiful.
Oh, my goodness, it's beautiful. My first experience with brush and ink, and it was a lovely experience. So this is, we started with this character, which is no or not. And we spent the first night on the first stroke until we got brave enough to do the other three. There's so many subtleties in how to begin the stroke, how to end the stroke, the width of the stroke, the angle of the stroke, the juxtaposition of the stroke to the other strokes. It's very involved. So this is not a no use seeking. Doesn't that look like a person doing a yoga pose? Mm-hmm. Seeking truth. No use seeking truth. You go, oh, Michael.
Oh, I get to do the left side. So yeah, we read it right to left. And other than the first character we did the first night, but the other seven we did in one day yesterday, and it was quite intensive. And then at the end of the day, this was the final exam, so to speak. And this line's tougher to me. It's affirming the certainty of relinquishing your views. Is, I believe, how it goes. Or another word, just you said earlier, is kind of letting go of your opinions, which we read today, and if you picked up on that in the chant today. So basically not seeking truth, but relinquishing your opinions. Was it that?
Thank
best
you.
Way to sum it, right?
Thank you both.
Thank you.
So this poem, also called Song of the Trusting Mind, is attributed, although I'm not sure there's any real, you know, thread you can pull that says it's just this guy, to Senkan or Senchan, again, a medieval monk. And the first line of this poem, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but those of you who have a practice might recognize this very well. I mumble it to myself probably 100 times a day, which is, the great way isn't difficult for those who are unattached to their preferences. So it's kind of well-loved with a certain consternation. And this line that they spent 2 days manifesting. Don't keep searching for the truth is one translation. Don't keep searching for the truth. Just let go of your opinions. That's one translation. Another translation is, don't even search for the truth. Do not search for the truth. Only cease to cherish opinions. Now, another translation is, seeking the truth is a false view, which should be abandoned. Just let go. Cease searching, looking. It's powerful, really. So speaking of chance, I've just returned from some time away, and part of that time I was babysitting or temple sitting Milwaukee Zen Center for a couple of weeks while their teacher was in Japan. And we chanted a different verse every single morning, which is the Sangemon. Sangemon is, in our book, it's called Confession or Repentance. At that temple and at other temples, but it's not typical, you chant this every morning. You wake up in the morning, and the first thing you do is chant Sangemon. I'm going to read you our translation of it. I won't do the Japanese. I'll just do the English. All my ancient wrong actions, from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, born through body, speech, and mind, I now completely avow. So given this calligraphy, I would like you to think of the term avow as I let go. I let go of everything that I've been carrying. I let go. So because of this daily practice of avowal, I have this renewed sense of, I guess, the wisdom of avowal, the wisdom of repentance, the wisdom of letting go, because it's wise. It's very wise to put down greed, to put down hate, to put down delusion. These are the things that separate us from one another. When we encounter ourselves in the mirror of Zazen, or each other on the street or at Trader Joe's or online. Hi, Randy. When we encounter each other, we may encounter in ourselves and in other person and other people the sense of a mask, some kind of separation, or maybe some pain and a feeling of someone's heart is being closed. This heart, your heart. And that's a time when we recognize this weight we carry, that we should avow greed, hate, delusion, ancient, twisted karma. It's not just yours, right? It comes to you from the eons of human experience. So I've quietly been continuing this practice here at Chikoji. In the morning, before I even brush my teeth, I vow, let go. I just let go. And I'm not just letting go my personal karma, of which there is plenty, just like you, but also my opinions, as evidenced in this calligraphy. Let go of your opinions. I have a lot of opinions, it turns out, and I bet you do too. Opinions about my country and what it should be like, my leaders and how they should comport themselves. I have opinions about just about everything. And I avow also this anger I have, that they're not doing it right. That humans still struggle to just coexist on this little sphere rolling around in the sky, that we can't get there. I have anger and grief, really deep grief about this. I avow it every morning, letting it go. I avow any ideas I have about who I am and who you are, any concept that this is any different than this, that we are all this, I let go. I know we are this. I know it. So do you somewhere. You're born to that. It's your birthright. You know it. I let go of my individual identity as something separate from everything. All we are is this together. So when we really wake up to this together, either in this seat, or at Trader Joe's, or in traffic, when you're noticing a reaction of separation from somebody, we wake up to this isness, Thoreau calls it this. He refers to himself as this. So it's to stop making a distinction between this and this. We're all this, the whole thing, this shared being together, this beingness, merged, breathing. You know you're not breathing without those trees. You know that. We're together in this endeavor. We're interconnected existence, and there is no us and no them. I relinquish my opinions about the them every morning, and I realize they're us. I'm them. So this Dharma teaching of avowal every morning that I picked up, thank you, Milwaukee Zen Center, has reminded me to be very humble and open-hearted in my return to whatever this is in that moment. It's not the same thing every morning, of course, this. Relinquishing or letting go of my ideas, my opinions, as the calligraphy says, about what yesterday should have happened yesterday that didn't get happened, let go. What my ideas about how the outcome should be tomorrow, let go. Just this, just right now. What's right here? What's right here? What was right here this morning in beginning meditation is one of the beginning meditators asked this very poignant question. After sitting, she said, and I'm not embarrassing you by pointing to you. She said, so I'm sitting and I have a sensation, a feeling in your body, a somatic experience. And then I sit with that somatic experience for a minute and I think, is that a thought? Do you understand how this ties in? The evaluation or the analysis of what this is extra. It's an opinion about what this is. It's a way of distinguishing this somatic experience from this totally mind-body experience. Is there any way to separate that? Is there any way to separate me from you? No. Everything is supporting us. It's not just a nice Zen saying. It's actually the truth. So this avowal stays with me. It has stayed with me. I think it'll last the rest of my life. It reminds me of my endless fabrication, my endless creating of a story about me and you, or the president, or the government, or the countries in the world who see themselves as separate from one another. It reminds me to return to what's happening just right now. That's it, right now. And it's about to change, right? In every moment. So one of the lessons this daily avowal has taught me, even though you did such a beautiful job sitting this morning, so thank you for your practice, is that anyone can sit in the Zendo. It's not that hard. It's hard. It's demanding. But how do you sit in the world? How do you sit in this world, in this, which is our shared existence? The real radical practice is to be in the world. So this line from the Shinshin Ming reminds us, what does it look like to let go of your opinions, sitting in this chaotic world and having no opinions? If we can do that, the next step is to take responsibility, complete, full responsibility to the world and to ourself and to the things and people we call others. How do we stay in a world that seems really designed for division and distraction? All of you who had trouble letting go of your phones out there, that's distraction. And if you look at the news, the whole world is saying division, division, division. So how do we sit in that cauldron, that hot pot of existence, and not get burned alive? Or get burned and then get up and keep going? Well, there's an old koan. A koan is an old story from the Chinese tradition, which is Chan, which is what Zen comes from. And I love these koans, and this is one of my favorites. It's very poignant. This is often called Yunmen's. Yunmen was the teacher in this story. Yunmen's, the world is vast and wide. Some of you have heard it before. maybe even out of my mouth, but I love it. Yunman was a renowned Zen master. He was famous for like being very sword-like in his, like sometimes an answer was one word and that was it. That's all you'd get, and it would pierce through you and penetrate you. And he was very famous for that. And he founded the Yunman school, which has now kind of been absorbed into the Rinzai school near the Soto school. It doesn't really matter, more distinctions, forget about it. Don't worry about it. So Yunmen's teaching emphasizes the impossibility of grasping Zen through intellectual exercise. So a lot of us here are good students. Probably all of you are good students. All of us are good students. And we use this incredible existence we have, this nice fat brain, to divide, distinguish. And Yunmen's saying, you can do all that you like, but not through words or concepts, through your actual experience of this moment now. So he advocates direct, intimate experience with your life, through your body. We're not saying to, you know, forget about
letting go.
And dropping all pretensions is another way of saying what's exactly in this calligraphy, letting go of your ideas about what this is. Letting go. So this is the koan from the Blue Cliff Record. This is the Blue Cliff Record. And I'm going to read it from my screen because my eyes are old and I can blow it up giant here. So forgive me. A monk asked Yunmen, how is it when the tree withers and the leaves fall? And Yunmen says, the body exposed in the golden wind. The body exposed in the golden wind. So here's a commentary. So there are koans, and then there are people who comment on the koans. And this is a good comment I selected because I think it's so straightforward. When the leaves fall and the tree withers, this is just the time of the golden wind blowing through the vast sky. If you can penetrate this point, you will see the reality of no birth and no death. Yunmen's saying, is like a blow to the head. It strips away conceptual understanding and leaves nothing but the living presence. So, full exposure. What is full exposure? We're naked in the winds of change, in the winds of impermanence. We're naked, letting everything in and letting go. And I think this is us living always on this really sharp edge. In any moment, it could go one way or the other, but you're not in the one way or the other until you're in the one way or the other. You're on the edge, always. This is us on the edge, on the edge. Your irritation, whatever your reaction is, don't let it become irritability because that's already an opinion. Just be with the irritability, be with the joy, be with the grief, be with the sadness, be with the happiness. That's enough, just like that. That's what being fully alive is, being awake, enlightened, if you want to use that word, which gets, you know, abused. Being awake is just being okay on this edge, knowing it can go either way, all the time. Your irritation, your reactions, whatever they might be, their opinions, they're the added part in this calligraphy. Don't keep searching for the truth. Just let go of your opinions. So Yunmen is not speaking, you know, metaphorically. He's not being metaphoric. He's saying, don't look away from this immediacy of this awakened mind, which is this right now, right here, now, nothing yet, and now it's gone. This again, now, 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 now. This is the awakened mind, nothing else. Not any ideas about it, okay? No words about it even. Just your actual experience, which does not separate, as the person in beginning meditation asked, you cannot separate a feeling, an itch, a sneeze from the mind that is experiencing that. It's this. I find it really, I said this koan for me is very poignant, because what do you think the golden wind, why is it golden? What color are the leaves when they're golden? What time of year is it?
Autumn.
Right. Fall. Fall. Letting go. The leaves are about to fall. That's us. You understand? We're the leaves. These people on the altar, our loved ones, they're about to fall. And so are we. So it's very, it gives me goosebumps. It's very poignant. Remembering that we're naked in this breeze. The golden wind is blowing. From the moment you're born, the golden wind is blowing. It's this very moment, unshielded. We are unshielded. Whether you think you've got protection or not, you do not. You're vulnerable to the winds of change. That's a truth. Whether it's joyous or sorrowful or empty in any given moment, we're hanging in the golden wind. So we often think that it's kind of a special thing we're doing in here. I don't know. I don't know that it's any more special than washing the dishes or hanging out the laundry or going to the bathroom or taking a bath or feeding your loved ones or giving a bottle of water to somebody who looks thirsty. It's not special. It's just this over and over and over again. We say this a lot. But how is it when we understand the golden wind, that the tree is withering and the leaves are about to fall in any given moment? How is that for you? How is that for this, us? And this is the question of an awakened mind, a life that has thrown itself into that wind and said, okay. It's the question that arises when a relationship ends and you go, holy moly. Or when a job changes, or a million other transitions of life. And trust me, getting older is one of those transitions. When we lose somebody, when a loved one is ill, when we know the leaves are falling, we can't look away. It's just right in front of us. When our plans for how things should be collapse, we're feeling the wind. It's the way we face every day, really, in every moment, which is the purpose of a vowel in the morning, letting go of how I think it should be and just meeting how it is. This kind of surrender to this deep understanding that we're not in control. None of you ended up here because you knew you were going to end up here, even a month ago or 2 months ago, or maybe even yesterday, maybe even this morning. You're not really in charge. And as I like to say, you're also responsible for the fact you're here. You're very lucky to be here. So Yunmen says the body is exposed in the golden wind. He doesn't say retreat to a mountain Zen center, though I'm really happy you're here. He doesn't say go hide anywhere. He doesn't say harder to be awake. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say that. He says, just present yourself to this, present yourself naked to the golden wind. Do it. Do it right now. Do it every day of your life. Keep your clothes on. Most of the time. But present yourself to the world like, okay, what do you want from me, world? I'm ready. So practice absolutely does not mean protecting ourselves from the golden wind. And by the way, sorry, my friends, there's no protection anyway. Everything that, every mask you put on, every outfit you put on, nothing protects you from the golden wind. It's life. It's beautiful and joyous if you can recognize it's how it is. So let's not resist autumn, okay? Let's not resist the autumns of our lives, wherever they arrive. The world is vast and wide. And right in the middle of this golden wind is your life and your life and your life and my life and our lives together right now. So don't look away. Don't keep searching for the truth. In other words, just let go of your opinions about what it ought to be. Let them go. Avow your own clinging to an idea of who you are. And this is a big ask, I know. So what will happen if you let go of these ideas about who you are, these concepts you have about who you are? I'm a good Zen student, or I'm a good teacher, I'm a good mother, daughter, sister, brother, husband. I'm just letting go and just instead meeting what's right here. What's right here? What is the actual lived experience of practicing living this right now? We're all in a relationship right now. That's all there is all the time. We're doing this together. I'm saying more words than you are, but you'll get a chance in a minute. We're doing this together. What happens when you don't separate? And this is your family right now. This is what's in front of you right now. What happens to this idea you have of yourself? Do you still have to be a good student? You have to be the one with the answer? Do you have to be the teacher who knows the answers? What happens if you let go of your opinion about the truth and just meet what seems to be happening right now? This is liberation. This is kind of a freedom. And it's scary because it is letting go of the thing that you identify the most with, which is this self separate from those selves. But this is the practice. This is our practice of letting go, of avowal. Standing naked in the golden wind, noble, being the Buddha that you are. We are all embodied beings facing this moment over and over and over again. And it's enough, just the way it is. Thank you for your attention. And, it's your turn to do what you're going to do. Don't be shy.
I'm not sure how to ask the question I have. Where does hope fit?
No hope.
Well, it depends. I always say that too. Tetsudo said there's no hope. And I think it has to do with the concept we have about this word hope. I like saying there's no hope too, but I actually have a very strong, I am someone recently in Chicago said you're preternaturally, say that for me, something like that. I am preternaturally naive. Or innocent. And I do. I tend to be optimistic and hopeful. I can turn everything into, well, look at, lucky us, look what we learned, which annoys many people. So the question is, maybe we could rephrase hope into faith. For me, hope has a certain kind of limiting the outcome. Mm-hmm. Like I have hope that we can all really get along, that we can set this example right here together, right now. All of us, not just me, by the way, because I'm in the hot seat. You're in the hot seat too, folks. It's your life, but you're going to ripple out into the world. That we can set an example that, well, we actually are all in this together. I have a deep faith in that. There's no question. I can't get rid of it. I have been disillusioned and disappointed a billion times, basically daily. And I run this place, so I get a lot of disappointments, not with the people here. They're incredible. But in life, you know, people are making choices that are harmful to themselves. And therefore, all of us, because we're not disconnected. So where's the place for hope? I think it's right here all the time. But I would call it faith, because faith is this kind of broad willingness to say, I have a sense that it will all be okay, but it will not be exactly what I think it's going to be. You know what I mean? I have, you can call that hope. These are just words. They're approximations. We're never on the money. But faith is kind of broad, right? I know we're going to be okay. I know we're all going to be okay. All of us, no matter what's happening. It's brutal some of the time, but you know you're going to be okay. That's faith. Hope might be a little narrow of a construction for me, but if it works for you, go forward with it. I think there's plenty of room for faith, because you don't know what's happening in this minute, in the next minute, in the next minute. The fact of impermanence gives you a bazillion, an incalculable number of possibilities. So we get attached to our fears and our anger and our delusion about how it's going to turn out. And that's a limited self. That's us creating that person who is comfortable being afraid and deluded and angry. But it's much more comfortable letting go of those opinions and saying, I really don't know what's happening. And I don't. And you might think you do, but you don't either. None of us knows what's happening. And a minute from now, we just don't. So you can kind of like relax into that, kind of lean back on a chaise lounge and say, okay, whatever happens, it's going to be okay. And that's faith. And interestingly, you know what this is called? Song of the Trusting Mind. Sometimes that's translated in my first lineage. It was called Faith Mind. So it's a very good question. Thank you for asking it. Without saying too much more about it, I see I'm coming to you. I want to say that trust for me is the same thing as faith. And if you practice, and I encourage you to practice this letting things be the way they are and you not doing anything about it, you develop trust. I mentioned to somebody this morning, one of our residents, that's the whole gig, trust. Not just of your teacher, of you, more importantly, of you, trusting the truth of this experience. So it's hard for a lot of us with a lot of conditioning about the shoulds. But it's the big gig, trust.
Okay. I kind of have like a few questions.
Okay, speak up a little louder, please.
Okay. So the first questions comes from a long time ago when I was reading some books about how house philosophy. Today's teachings remind me about that. That question is like, what we are talking about gnostic virtues do not doubt. But sometimes I was wondering if does that mean that we should not like ask questions or question. Or if we are, you know, in our daily life, in when we're working with somebody or study in schools, does that mean we just let go all the questions and do not doubt? And on the top of that, another question is that how could we maintain that kind of unconditional happiness when somebody, because in real life, maybe somebody will judge us, will question us, will put a lot of assumption on us. So in that case, how could we keep that pure mind?
It's a really beautiful question. Thank you. And the answer is the same to both questions. So it makes it easy for me. The question, the essential question, is not to keep asking anything other than, who is this? Who is this who's having this experience? I mean, I'm sorry to make it so, you know, down to the ground in terms of bare, but in any given moment, who's having this experience? Now, that's a really important question because something is responding, right? Some this-ness is responding. Well, who is that? And in my experience, it's never the person who's right here, right now. The this that is responding is, I would call it like an artifact, a remnant. You know, in photography, when you do editing, sometimes there's an artifact and you can see the editing. This, sometimes the this who is responding is an artifact, something that you have been through. It's already happened. It's already gone. That this has lived a full life, but there's an artifact and you're going to carry that artifact. He or she or they are right here. So who is responding? And the second question is, there's nothing wrong with questions. Your mind was built for distinction. If you didn't distinguish, you'd be dead, right? Truck coming. That's a truck. That's a me. It's really important to ask questions. But the essential question is, even when someone is going rah, 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 at you, am I taking this personally? Really? Like, who is it? Who is this? Who is this? Who is this that's taking it personally? This is a very kind of deep question that goes on for the rest of your life. Who is this? With a lot of practice, as I mentioned to the beginning meditators this morning, with a lot of practice, or maybe no practice, and you just get there quickly, you start recognizing that there is no one to be offended. There's no one here. There's no one person here. Some things feel good, some things don't, just like, you know, this cloud's going by and the grass is growing. It's just part of the interconnected mutual experience of our lives. So in that moment when you're feeling like they're questioning me, well, the question is, are they questioning you or are they questioning themselves? When people start really pointing and blaming, the real act of compassion towards yourself and towards them is to see their hurt, to recognize their hurt, to see, oh, they're blaming me and they're pointing at me and they think it's all my problem. And what can I do? Or as I said this morning, again, to the beginning meditators, maybe the first noble truth, the Buddha's teaching is, there is suffering, right? That's the first noble truth. And then in parentheses, you could say, don't make things worse. Don't make things worse. Does that help? Okay, good luck.
Can I add?
Sure.
For the second question, if someone's judging you, it's not about you. It's about them. It's not about you. It's what's going on. It's like Nandan said. It's what's going on inside of their mind and what they're thinking. So don't take it personally.
Yeah, it's really helpful to just meet it, as Atsudo is suggesting. It's not about you, actually. No. Even when they're telling you, and it hurts, sometimes it really hurts, not about you, as Atsudo said. And, you know, by saying, they might be saying you did this wrong in your job, for example, or in your relationship. I am sometimes told I'm unskillful in my intimate relationship. And, you know, I have to be, am I unskillful? Who is it that's unskillful? Mm-hmm. It's not this one. It's usually a little frightened girl. Mm-hmm. Who's afraid of something. And then I have to turn that light back. So watch yourself more than anybody else. And watch yourself. Just watch the mind, what it creates. With the kind of what Giroux, who I hope is feeling better right this minute, what Giroux calls affectionate awareness. Mm-hmm. So none of this, okay, none of that, folks. Not what we're about. There's enough suffering. You don't need to add to it. Mm-hmm. Don't make it worse for yourself. And what you do to yourself, just trust me, it goes everywhere, endlessly.
I have a difficulty understanding the freedom and responsibility because I have two daughters. One of them, she's in second grade, Emma. I feel if I give freedom to myself, I let go, then I have a peace of mind of not being anxious about her future. you know, focusing on her study. But then I feel like I'm not being responsible as a mom not to, you know, give her tasks and watch her practice piano every day and not get mad when she makes mistakes. I just don't know where that line falls and how do I make choices to let myself free and also be responsible.
Parenthood is everybody's a beginner. So it's not easy. I have grown children, so I have a different perspective. Many of you have grown children in here. And it's they're the best teachers. I mean, your children are the best teachers. Now you're so aware of what's happening here, of your own reaction, that you see that she's your teacher and she's telling you what is the sweet spot, what is the middle way. You know, in our culture, this whole culture, not just your culture, my culture, the whole culture, there is an amazing amount of intense pressure on our young people. And I'm not sure it's fruitful. And in fact, my experience in this seat is that maybe 90% of the people who come here are grown children who had those pressures. And they're like, I did everything right. I did everything my mom and dad told me to. I achieved and achieved and achieved. And now I've got this job and I can play the violin. And I'm so good at everything I do because I am competent. And they're unhappy because they have never looked at what's right here. What do I want to do with my precious life? If you knew, I'm sorry to say this because God forbid this happens, but if you knew that we just had a finite amount of time, which is the truth, we have a finite amount of time. What does enjoyment of that life look like? It has to be everything. It can't just be work, 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 work. This is childhood, and it makes all the causes and conditions that we then have to go sit and face the wall about. I know. I've done this to my kids. I told my older son, I just tried not to make the same mistakes my parents did. And he said, you didn't, Mom. You made your own mistakes. That's how it goes, my friends. You're making mistakes every day. Do what you think is wholesome. That means causes her no harm, causes you no sense of, you know, listen to this voice right now that's saying, it's hurting me. I'm frustrated. I'm angry because she's not doing it right. Who is that? It's in here. It's not her. It's in here. So good luck. I am so with you. I am so, my heart is so with you. I know this and I know it from my own childhood and from my children's childhood. Everybody in here is a product of that thinking. It's not bad. I'm not saying for you to stop it. I'm saying for you to find the middle way that is really allows her to really know who she is and enjoy herself. Because it's important to love your life. It's going to be over soon. We are naked in the autumn wind. So is she, God knows. All of us are. So I bow to your effort to be with her and your own experience. I really do. It's not easy.
May I add a little 2 cents?
Sure.
Just as a teacher and a parent, I know how valuable allowing children to make mistakes is and how much they learn from the mistakes that they make. Took me a really long time to figure that out with my own child. I needed to let him make mistakes, and he learned from them.
Okay. I've been thinking of how to ask this question, and I still don't know because there's so many different parts to it. So bear with me. When I think about the letting go of your opinions, especially in our political climate right now, it's hard to see, I guess I should say, what's like perceived injustices against people. And if we are all this, those injustices are happening to ourselves, are happening to
our one body. Yes.
So if you let go of your opinion on this song, how do you then work to bring about an end to the injustice? How does speaking up and speaking out or acting play into that?
It's a really, really important question, but I'm going to ask you to stretch your distinction a little farther. When Zenkan says, let go of your opinions. He's not saying let go of your experience of reality. He's telling you to have your experience of reality, but not an opinion about a particular outcome. Sure, my training is in law. I really believe in justice, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm doing everything I can. I'm signing things and I'm doing what I can. And so should you. This is not an exercise in looking away. It's an exercise in seeing what's right in front of you and doing what you can. And maybe it's writing a letter. Maybe it's marching. Maybe it's making a friend. I don't know what it is for any of you. But that's different than having an opinion about an outcome. So fully in your own experience, fully in, like, this does not feel right to me. I have to do something. What is it that I can do? And yes, we all want a particular outcome. And that's an opinion about how it should be. And that is like a driving force. People don't come and sit zazen because they, you know, are just walking by. They have a question that they need to look at. That's a driving, it's called citta, by the way, in Sanskrit. But this driving force, like, I gotta understand how to be in this world with what's happening. It's this catastrophic mess. And it's beautiful. So there isn't anything but this. You might notice if you look at our altar that Trump, our president, is on that altar. I put him there. Giroux suggested it. I said, anybody you want to add? And he said, Trump. And boy, is that a lesson. Mm-hmm. I am sending him goodwill. If he is better, we are all better. If Netanyahu and everybody in the world is better, we're all better. If we stop dividing and saying he's the bad guy, some of this conduct is not what I think is okay. And I'm going to do everything I can to participate. But I don't have an opinion about that it has to be this way to be right. This is the world of possibilities. And that's what opens up when you don't know, but your intention is to be together. Does that help? Good. Good question. Thank you. Yes, Michael-san.
Thank you, Nanzo. This was really profound. And I, through all the moments this entire weekend, I kept coming back to this this concept and really just found it in the just let go. That the Giroux mentioned that phrase and it kind of hung with me this whole time. One of the things, I don't know if I have a question so much as a comment, I'm open to a response about, but I, in all of that, have come back to the three poisons. You kind of alluded to them earlier in your talk. You said want, which I agreed. Anger, you mentioned anger, and then delusion, right? Are the three. There's suffering, right? Don't make them worse. And then alongside that, came back to this concept that I just read about this weekend of our consciousness repository and the power of that. Made me think about how children don't have a very large consciousness repository, but we as adults we've stacked up that house, you know, and it's well built. And so I guess I'm curious about those concepts, those poisons, the consciousness repository in this, in the letting go, and I guess the how. Mm. Tough.
Yeah. Well, in our tradition, the consciousness depository of which he speaks is kind of, in Jung terms, would maybe our collective unconscious. So I'm not sure I agree with you that babies don't have a bunch of it. I think we're born with plenty of generational stuff. At least maybe the opportunity to express that generational stuff is present and might not be expressed because of causes and conditions in this actual moment, in each moment, right? So you have a four-year-old, he's inherited all of your and your partner's DNA, and some of that might get triggered to have a certain kind of behavior. So that behavior might be like latent and never expressed. So I'm not sure that babies are tabula rasa. I would say they are not tabula rasa. In my own experience, they're their own people from the get-go, and it's shocking. But having said that, the how is really an important exercise and practice. And I guess it's Dogen's thing, turn the light inward. There's no place out there to get it, right? There's no place we can go, including here. What we do here is present a place for you to be quiet and face what you are fabricating. And that is in part of this unconscious depository, you call it. I like that term. I always call it the collective unconscious, but that gets a little woo-woo for people. The fact is that none of us is not impacted by causes and conditions that we cannot find the thread and pick it up, right? So the delusion inherent in our trying to know it all, the reason we don't know is because we know we can't know, right? We can't take this apart and say, where did that begin? Well, I mean, it might have begun, you know, 4 million years ago. Mm-hmm. It evidently did, because we wouldn't be here from all of this collective history. So while we sometimes can say, oh, I know who this is right now, as you two were talking and you were talking, I know who's responding right now. I remember when I was 4 and now I've got a story about it. Nothing wrong with these stories. It's a story. It's your lived experience. But it is not who you are. It is not who you are, because who you are is interrelated to all of that other stuff too, not just this one story that you're clinging to, because it supports your identity as a victim. Usually that's what we do to ourselves. Some of you as a perpetrator, I'm a bad guy, I didn't do the right thing, I got to be punished. But most of us prefer to be victims. So this comes back to your responsibility. You have no control and you're completely responsible. How's that? You know, life is just going to keep changing and coming at you. And yet you are conducting your life in a way that you're asking, how can I come to this decision and let go of my ideas about it? And this is the practice. I mean, people say endless, Dharma gates are endless. You're going to chant that in a second. I like to say they're relentless because it just goes on forever. There's not a moment in your life where you're faced with this now, where you're not going, how am I going to merge? How am I going to be with this in a harmonic way? And by the way, many of you don't live in an intentional community other than your families, which, whether you like it or not, that's an intentional community. You pick them. I'm talking about your spouses and children. But we live in an intentional community, and this is the only one in this room right now who lives here, Sokyo. And all of us are practicing all the time with taking responsibility for our experience and also trying to do this in harmony with everybody else. That means you have to let go of our opinions, right? And I have a lot of opinions. All of you do too. I have a lot of opinions. And then someone gives me another opinion and I go, well, there's a whole other way. So how does this feel? How do I engage with this? So it's kind of relentless, endless, and very important question, how to let go of our ideas about who we are. It doesn't mean that you have to kick any version of yourself away. Like, you're not ignoring 4-year-old Michael or 10-year-old Michael or 20-year-old Michael or 30 or 40-year-old Michael. What you're doing is integrating them all. They're all in this moment, right? Just like a funnel, like into this moment. And that's the practice. Good luck. We are running out of time, but I see more questions. And let's say, who hasn't really feels urgent? I need to ask this. And it's okay, because I'll be up there. You can ask other questions. It's okay to stick your hand out and say, I really need to know. Show me your hand. There you go.
Yeah, I have a question about, you know, related to this, what you said. So how do I hold the tension between not actively seeking for the truth, but also wanting to be more self-aware? That feels like I'm in pursuit of something.
It does seem like the pursuit of something, right? And, you know, so this is kind of a word thing because we talk about there's nothing to do and nowhere to go, but you're actually sitting down making this huge effort. What's that? Well, it's an effort to do what? To sit down and do nothing, to just completely be this experience. So I want you to sit down and do nothing and have nothing to do and have no judgments and opinions and evaluations about it, so that you know what the truth actually is arising in each moment. So It's both and, both doing nothing and kind of allowing the sitting practice to inform what is the truth right now, right now, right now, right now. But there's no truth. I can't say this is my truth and I'm carrying this like a torch for the rest of my life. That would be delusional. And it would make the world angry. Because if you cling, you're not clinging to the truth. You're clinging to this person who thinks he or she is righteous and knows something. What is there to know this moment? Over and over and over again. And that's why it requires you sitting down. Resting in each moment, sometime every day, take some time to rest in just this, not what you think it should be. It's hard, but is that answer? Okay, thank you. Okay, folks, we got to close, but I'm really, really just happy to be in this mess with you, this beautiful catastrophic mess. I'm so grateful for you being here. I want to tell you that Jikoji, really appreciates your presence. You know, we do this for you and we can't do it without you. So thank you for coming. Since the Buddha's time, over 2,500 years ago, the monks and the nuns were only supported by the lay sangha. That means the people who are not monks and nuns. And Jikoji is that monk and nun. We survive completely on your donations. So we don't, you know, even though we live in money land, we have no money. So if you are able to, and the teachings are always offered freely here, if you're able to support these, Jikoji is the monk and the nun, not me, this practice place. If you appreciate our offerings, please give as much as you can. We're in the midst of a fundraising campaign because we have to replace our septic. We have permitting issues. We have decks, as you can see, that need some loving replacement. So anything you can give, if you work for a company that does matching donations, please let us know. You can write to any of the names on our website, Shika. This is Sokyo Shika. That's her title. Or info, or I'm Nenzen. You can write Nenzen. If you can accomplish that, so it's very helpful. Anything you give makes a difference. There are QR codes up in the community room on the table. And of course, on our website, you can donate. Anything you give really makes a difference to our ability to keep doing this. So thank you so much for your practice. You're all invited to have some cookies and tea. And those of you who still have burning questions, I'll be up there and we'll meet each other, okay? Thank you.
In the bottom of page 2, after the Dharma talks.
Sorry, Randy, I didn't even get to.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.